Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, we've got friggin' everybody here. Aki's here. Jacob's here. Chris is here. Purnell's here. Brooke is here. Tim is here. And we've even got a big Adam on the show. How's everybody doing?
Oh, yeah.
Aroused.
Great.
Less great now.
We're good.
That is so factory. What a great
we have eight people here, and that was the least ambitious how are you all doing I've ever heard on this show.
Somebody made it weird, and it's like we finally got Tim back on the show, so please don't fuck this up for me, guys.
That ship's already sailed, hon, but okay.
We missed you, dude.
I know, like Brooke's over here, like they'll make it awkward, and Aki's like, ew, gross. Way to go, Aki.
Fall into
way
the abyss.
Making it awkward for all of us.
Well, to answer the actual question, I'm doing all right today.
Thank you, Purnell. Fucking thank you. Just answering a question.
Properly. Fuck off.
I'm doing all right. How about yourself, sir?
I'm doing wonderful now that the show started.
Are you, though?
No, I don't believe that. It's a lie. It's all a lie.
I was going to say, I think you're going to regret it in about 10 minutes.
I'm actually really let down. I'm on my very last strawberries and cream Dr. Pepper.
That's
a
question. Was it a limited time one? Because I'm down to my last few two.
I don't think it's limited. I think it's just more hard to find because everybody wants it.
Amazon bitches. Dr. Pepper,
strawberries, and cream.
Well, hey, if it makes you feel any better, at least you're not a little further south. Otherwise, you'd be looking for water.
Water.
Water. Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's wild over here right now. Water on the hunt for water.
What?
And yeah,
I saw that post. What's up in Philadelphia?
So apparently there was a chemical spill just outside, like somewhere near Philadelphia on the like northeastern side of it. And as a result, the water is not safe to drink, which means people are going bonkers, rightfully so, to find water and buy it. So I'm not in Philadelphia, obviously, but I'm close enough to Philadelphia that people are coming down here and taking up our water, too. I am thankful that we're not on the same watershed as the polluted water, though, that got hit. So our water supply is fine, but the actual purchasable water is being taken up, too, because as a person would think, if you're looking to get a hard-to-find resource, you're going to immediately go outside of your local area to get it, because your local area is going to be already dredged up. And Joe could have been in there, but he's like a good hour or two away from there. So
I'm way further. I'm like 3 hours from Philly.
Joe's nowhere near it.
There's no way it's three. It takes me 2.5 to get to you from where I'm at. But 2 hours is still far enough away, which I said I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, man.
Stop taking your private jet everywhere. Get out of your helicopter. Hey, off the rocket boots.
Just because I'm a man who takes risks on the road.
I know you're tall, but you don't have to take such big steps.
I won't stand for height shaming in this chat.
That was great.
I'm laughing at all y'all in Texan, from where I am, you cannot get out of the state if you drive in any direction for 3 hours.
Oh, nice. So true.
Yeah, that's one thing I'll never want. Like, I go to California, I go to Texas. Those are the places where I'm like, look, you guys need access to other states because I'm not digging that one.
I have Purnell starts a subject and then changes the subject before anyone could respond to him.
Yeah. In my defense, I didn't start that transition. Someone else did.
Yeah, true. All right.
Am I allowed to ask how tall?
All right, Jacob, you talk.
Now, real quick, how close do you live to Muhlenberg?
I have no clue.
Well, what about Exton?
I don't know.
Mechanicsburg?
Can you name a place that is actually relevant?
I'm trying to track down Dr. Pepper for him, all right?
Dox yourself, Joe.
Exton's, but I'm near Exton, so thanks for that legwork.
Ducks, I mean, for the
Joe could just look at Amazon.
I'll just check Dollar General. They always seem to have it.
Yo, Amazon wants $27 for a 12.
Yeah, Amazon is not where you buy soda ever.
Yeah, like shipping, I'm going by Target prices.
No, you never buy soda on Amazon because they charge like $20 a case on there.
Normal soda too, not hard to find stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amazon, all the stuff that you can consume tends to be overpriced.
So, yeah, Amazon is good for non-consumables.
You remember when a 12-pack of Soda Pops was only $3?
I remember paying 2 for 20. Wait, no. 20 for 2. Wait,
see,
no.
Adam, you haven't been coming on Tuesday for very long, but this is the norm for this episode. Joe will talk about soda.
Oh, is today the 420 episode? Soda.
No.
No, it's not 420.
Jesus.
It's not even April yet. Jesus Christ, 420.
I'll
hire you.
I want whatever she's snugging.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm just confused.
She got that time travel weed.
Time travel.
The good shit. The
stinking shit.
Yeah. Fucking June for me, man. Adam, is this water situation affecting you at all, or Jacob? Adam or Jacob?
She's going back to the future.
I didn't even know about it.
It shouldn't be Adam, because Adam's further west than me, I think.
Yeah, it's not affecting my area at all.
Right.
I'm in Hanover. I'm pretty far away.
Yeah,
well, you guys are closer than me, so...
No, they're not.
2 hours.
Adam isn't.
2.5 hours from Philly.
I mean, southern-wise, you're closer to Philly than I am, but...
I truly thought that our first episode with 8 people in it in quite a while would have less arguing about geolocation and more. You know, that wasn't the topic I was thinking would be the intro to the show.
Give us a
topic, Chris. Hit us up. Give us the good Texas shit.
How much do y'all like places in Texas?
Not at all.
That's never good. That's an even worse topic of discussion.
I have one. The eShop closed. The eShop did close officially, so we can talk about that shit. Anybody make any last minute decisions, or were you committed to the fact that you hadn't been on the eShop in the last 5 years? Why start now?
I will say I did purchase stuff on the eShop prior to it, like just prior to it, like the announcement that it was closing. Because I bought some Wii U stuff, but yeah, I haven't been on the 3DS one since the last time I reviewed something. But that's because I bought all my stuff physical on the 3DS. I didn't start downloading games by habit until the Switch.
Hmm.
Very nice.
I mean, I was always physical myself, but I mean, when there was a game that was only acquired digital, I just bit the bullet and grabbed it. So like, I ended up getting the last 2 Box Boy games on the 3DS. And on the Wii U, despite owning a cart, I thought, you know what, I'll just buy Ogre Battle 64 so I can play it on my actual living room television set and call it a day. So
I remember it was that crab game, the horseshoe crab game that I bought. That was the last 3DS game I bought.
White crab or
crab? That sounds good.
I remember that. You were like, I'm gonna buy this right now on the show, and that's all I remember.
Yeah.
Oh, that one.
I was talking about it. I don't remember like anything about it though.
It was
fun.
Did
I get the price right?
$199 or $99 Yeah. No, you got it right. Yeah, it was $199. I think it was like $99 on sale or something. I think you got both prices right. Well done.
Ho.
But I gotta boot up my 3DS now to figure out what the title is.
Speaking of amazing games, if you're hanging out in chat today, warning, if you don't hang out in chat, you should probably hang out in chat. But if you're hanging out in chat today, we are giving away a copy of Peppa Pig World Adventures.
Oh, snap.
For Xbox. So
Horseshoe Crab Rescue.
Oh, my God. That's right.
Horseshoe Crab Rescue.
Pig the Crab.
I haven't even put it in a folder. So that was definitely the last game I purchased on the 3DS. So there you go.
Adam, do you have a 3DS or a Wii U? Were you part of the final wave of purchases at all?
I have a 3DS, but I didn't.
You didn't go
to the retirement.
I didn't use any. I didn't actually download any games on 3DS.
Really?
Like, in its lifetime, you're saying? No. Like in its lifespan?
Yeah. Like
it really
since,
didn't feel
since
like
I owned it and bought it on launch day. I never once, other than the titles that were given to users for free for like the ambassador program when they flubbed the launch and all that stuff. Like I never purchased eShop anything ever.
Yeah, wow. When the system was new, it did not feel like an imperative at all. Like, I remember the first game I bought was Mutant Muds because I downloaded the demo and I loved it, but there was no physical version, so that started that obsession. Actually, now I even do have a physical version.
I feel like the first game I bought on that system digitally may well have been Mighty Switch Force. And like, there were definitely a couple of times where I was like, whoa, no one saw that coming. This is actually a pretty fun game. And it was also before Nintendo became, at least in my mind, became known for being bad with online shopping stuff. So it was like, oh, yeah, I'll just carry it over to the next Nintendo handheld. No big deal. I'm just going to buy my shit.
Nintendo just like doesn't know how to handle the internet yet. And it's really weird to me.
They really don't, and it makes me sad. Makes me real sad. But
that's because old people are in charge, and old people are never with the program.
Old people are in charge of all these consoles right now. They just hire people that seem like they're young just to fool the rest of us. They all are controlled by old people.
I believe that.
It's like, hey, I hired this 25 or 30-year-old hip character to go on stage and say, check out these hot new games coming to our PlayStation real soon. Like, Mario, we ain't got that shit, but we got a raccoon and a robot. You hang with those fuckers for a couple hours. Anyway, the point is...
Isn't that Marvel?
Bad version of Lumbax.
They don't even hire those people anymore. They just get influencers to do it and pay them a bunch of money.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, they'll just be like, hey... don't forget to click like and subscribe this shit because I'm going to tell you about the new hotness.
I despise watching conferences anymore because they have like the fake influencer bullshit on there. I can't stand how forced and awkward it is. It's so like try hard-ish.
That's why the trick now is just accept that we're old and we just look for the actual report of the actual information.
Kids
not hype.
Their goddamn new hickeys and their Justin Biebers and their avocado toast.
I think it also helps though that era came about at the time when there was just too much shit to follow any damn way, so I can't get hyped about 20 new games that are coming when I'm still trying to play the 25 games I've been sitting on for the last goddamn amount of months or whatever. So it's like, what that was the point?
25 games.
Speaking of games we're playing.
I'm being modest. I'm being very modest. Let's be real here. Point is, a lot of fucking games. Nobody's got time for them, so why worry about what's coming when you ain't got time for what's here?
Speaking of not having a lot of time and what we're playing,
ooh,
we got a lot of reviews tonight. Should we dive into these?
Speaking of that, sure. Clyde, what you cooked for dinner last week? I don't want to.
Brooke, did you want to talk about what you cooked?
What did I cook? IRL or in the game we're about to review?
Both. In real life.
Yo, if you let me give this review, Joe, you're going to like be mad if I also talked about what I cooked IRL because this game's intense. We better jump in here.
Well, let's find out because the first game to talk about tonight is Chef Life, a restaurant simulator developed by Cyanide Studio, published by Nacon, released March 28th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $39.99. Create and manage your dream restaurant, menus, purchasing, decor, staff, equipment, customers, and don't forget the actual cooking. Experience the daily life of a restaurateur and earn your awards from the Michelin Guide. Brooke, tell us about your time in Chef Life and in Brooke Life.
Yo.
Did you say dick or staff in that copy?
Decor.
Oh, it sounds like dick or. It's whatever.
Why?
Anyway.
Y'all cracking me up tonight.
Rick, how many dicks did you hire for this show?
We're not even... Hey, come on, man. This is Tuesday night. This ain't a Thursday night show. All right.
I'm here. It's automatically a Thursday night show. I'm sorry.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Dude, this game is hard. I'm also, if you are my friend on PlayStation, you are going to know that I'm completely obsessed with this game right now. I'm playing it pretty much nonstop. As many of you know, I worked in the restaurant service industry for 15 years. Front of house, back of house, service management, back of house management. And I got to say, this game is the most realistic... Sorry, putting my rabbit down. This game is the most realistic cooking game I've ever played. It is extremely, like, too real of a portrayal of restaurant management, down to inventory levels, staff hiring, appeasing influencers, which Joe hates, getting Michelin stars, and redecorating the restaurant. But you got to slowly get money by selling food for a while first. It's one of the most real resource management video games I've played. This game is so real that I don't think servers and managers and cooks in real life are going to want to play this game. I'm shaky on the escapism level offered for them. But I think even if that's the case, this is a solid game for them to try anyway, because they'll feel incredibly validated at how this game is going to open a lot of eyes as to just how freaking difficult it is to work in any part of, let alone run a successful restaurant. This game is very challenging. You can turn off certain aspects that make it challenging, like turning off needing to get customers their dishes for any specific amount of time during the dinner service. So you can take your time.
That's good. So it's customizable, like difficulty-wise.
Yeah, and you know, out of the goodness of my heart for this review, I decided to keep it on regular difficulty the whole time, and it was hard, but it really crunched on my brain. So yeah, you can turn off certain aspects and make it more challenging like that, but it's still complicated nonetheless, even if you do one or more of those. But if you go into this just like raw-dogging it, if you will, this game is insane, dude. You start out as a chef who just opened your first restaurant with your old-time buddy and business partner, friggin' Kasim. Oh my god, sorry, I'm so mad at Kasim right now. Oh man. Anyway, you design your character. We're going to get to that. You design your character. I have turquoise hair, and I'm a chick named Michiru Kayo, aka Cellar Neptune. Then you walk your little 3D person character over to your third-person character over to your cookbook and learn a few recipes. Now, you don't just go to the cookbook and press A or whatever, and boom, now the recipe's memorized or in your inventory or something. No, it's an actual book with pages you have to flip through. You need to actually sit there and read it. And you're not going to retain all the information the first read because it's complicated. You can pin recipes to the screen, but there's only limited information in those pins to serve as reminders while you cook.
Ooh.
Your day starts in the morning, services in the evening. Let's say you want to make meatballs. Cool. Well, now you need to establish a relationship with your grocery delivery service. Order meat, pantry items, and vegetables. Now you need to wait for the order to get there. You have to do this every day. You gotta walk. You can walk past the dish pit and the dining room, fully customizable, by the way, to your office, and take a little nap in your easy chair and wait for the groceries to get here. Or you can sit in your desk chair, which is another chair in your office, and manage different aspects of the restaurant on the computer, or you can swivel that chair around to the catalog where you can order furniture, plates, meat grinders, refrigerators, dishwashers, plants for the dining room. You can check the cork board to check in on your long and short-term goals and special requests from the people that you meet throughout the plot. But I thought we were just making meatballs. Well, we are, and I hope you bought a meat grinder from that catalog, because now the groceries are here. By the way, we had our choice of like 6 stores to buy meat and produce from, and they all give your ingredients different stats like quality, price, expiration date, and social responsibility. What the heck is that? You're going to have to see me after class because we don't even have time to talk about social responsibility right now. We don't have time to talk about all the shit this game is doing tonight. I'm just going to tackle meatballs. So, meatballs. After you go and you load a crate full of groceries that the lady delivered, you can stock your fridge. You're going to want to grab a big old side of beef, some bread, some parsley, onions, garlic, salt, and pepper. You take all that over to the cutting boards. Now we're going to use the meat cutting board to cut up the meat. You have your choice of cuts you can do, but you're going to just choose big old rough cubes of beef, like for a stew or whatever, for this recipe. Now for the garlic and onion, different cutting boards, please. Don't be gross, because one of the people we have to impress is the health inspector, and we will be adhering to real-life safety food standards throughout the game. And as someone who has taken that test multiple times as a restaurant bar manager, these are real standards we have to hold to. Okay, vegetable cutting board time. You need to dice the onion, not sliver it. If you're like me, you keep forgetting this and you end up throwing away a bunch of slivers at the end of the night. And that shit is not free. Now, you're going to want to take everything you've prepped and grind it up in the meat grinder we bought earlier. If you didn't buy that meat grinder earlier, you can't make this recipe. We turn the machine on, but we have to turn it off at some point to season the mixture. Every dish's needed perfection seasoning bonus requirements. Is random. Wow, that sentence was awkward in my notes. Sorry about that. So you want a perfectly seasoned dish. How do you know how much salt to put in this meatball mix in? You smell it, and you're going to trust your heart by being honest with yourself using your chef sense. When you go into chef sense mode, magical harp music starts to play, and shoujo anime love bubbles are all over the place as you connect with your food emotionally. Your sense will tell you if you need more salt, herbs, pepper, whatever, and you do this until your sense tells you it's perfect. Now, exit chef sense mode. Finish grinding up the meatballs. You're going to walk away from the meat grinder while it grinds and cook or prep something else if you need to, which you do, but we're not even going to talk about that today. Once the meat mix is ground, you can pop them in the fridge for finishing during this dinner service later if you want, but by now it's probably early afternoon. Either way, you're going to eventually take the mix to a mixing table and roll the meat mix into balls. You can now put this in the fridge for later if you want. Or what if this is dinner service? Well, we make your sauce to order every time. Lucky you. Brooke said grumpily, you're going to want to grab a saute pan, which is one of like 8 different pans, dude. And I'm not including pots and sheet pans and shit. You want to get that on the range. You want to start with a cold pan, not a hot pan. Get a nice sear on those meatballs. In the first phase, add seasoning if your chef sense tells you to. Second phase, toss in a can of tomato sauce from the pantry. Let that cook down. While you're waiting, you can slice some mozzarella for a nice caprese salad. Someone might order later. Go crazy, but don't let the meatballs burn. Now they're in their third phase. You are going to want to add some parsley that you chopped earlier. Finish it up. Now you can plate it. Plating can be crazy, but it doesn't have to be. You can auto-plate it, or you can go into a physics engine simulator to take each thing and drop it on the plate and do little streaks of sauce, or add a leaf or a little bit of sauce in a thing or something.
Oh, it's actually how crazy really cool. Can you get?
You can get totally crazy, and it's just really fucking intense, but you don't have to. You can always default to the default plating. This is just there if you want it, and it doesn't necessarily increase your points. So it's just
I wonder if this is where the dick comes in.
Or maybe.
I wonder. Yeah. I can only imagine the TTP on this game with someone who really knows what they're doing, controlling that sauce and just drawing.
Not even after dark yet, the dick's already coming in.
Hey,
what is TTP?
Time to penis.
Wow, you learn something new every day on the SML podcast.
We have been told that in multiple review or interviews on this show that TTP is a stat in game development. Whoa. Time to penis from game launch to first dick in the game.
Jesus crap. And yet yes, it actually makes sense after picto, or rather dicto chat.
Yeah, dicto chat. So I can only wonder if we're going to see some.
I miss
like chef life creations.
Nah, not in this game. Not for this one, but maybe
never
for
know. Game simulator.
So anyway, it's really cool. You can do the plating styles. You can save it for later if you want. Now, after you're done plating, you got to give it to the waiter, who you had to pick out and hire. Or hey, maybe Kasim hired him behind your back. He's done it before. Once everyone is ordered and eaten and left, it's nighttime now. And we hung out morning, afternoon, evening, and all the while, the day slowly ticked by and we get to enjoy a daylight progression system that we can see because the kitchen and the dining rooms are full of windows. And it's actually very, very pretty, especially at sunset, especially for a 3D cooking game. The food is beautiful too. But yeah, that's just a piece of a day in the life. And all the while, Kasim was just walking around, not doing anything during the prep times, all to the afternoon, being like, wow, today's going to be a great day. I feel amazing. And it's like, wow, Kasim. Must be nice. We get through dinner service. Kasim's like, well, I better hit the hay. I'll leave you to clean up. And I swear to God, dude. But the good news is
he later, can't even help you clean up, that lazy bastard.
Oh, my God. But the good news is later, you can give him some tasks. The bad news is once you can give him tasks, he really never shuts up because he constantly needs his handheld. And he's constantly talking like when I'm trying to freaking concentrate on this medium steak just for like 5 seconds, dude, find something to do. You can give everybody tasks, but we don't even have time to talk about all that. That is just some of this game. This game is so intense. I played this for many hours at this point, and I'm not very far into the plot because it's really complex and demanding. Just on this regular mode I'm playing, and I consider myself a very good cook IRL. It's one of the only things that I feel like I can do very, very well. But anyway, while complicated, when you pull off a service and get it all done, make like all A+ perfect dishes, the servers get better tips, they're happy, it feels fantastic. It is incredibly rewarding and thrilling when you can actually pull this game off, but there is kind of a steep learning curve.
Well,
so let's rate it.
It is sitting at $39.99. What are your thoughts?
I love cooking games. You of all people know this. This is my favorite cooking game, and it's my favorite restaurant sim game, and I used to have different favorites for both of those. I think this is a buy it. I would buy this. I already have it. I would buy it again and give it to someone and to guilt them into playing it too, so I would have someone to talk about how crazy this game is. That's what kind of game this is. You just want to scream because it's crazy. You play this also.
I was going to say, the question is, can you make wet pancakes in the game?
Dude, I don't know, man. And maybe that's on me.
Who's going to buy those? Who's going to buy them?
I think we need some wet pancakes. Does anyone have any wet pancakes?
Dropping fucking wet pancakes all over your ear. Hey, Big Adam!
Is that a Norgy poo?
Guess what?
Dude, it's been way too long.
That's fine.
That's fine.
Oh my god, is he really here? This was a sound clip.
Yes, we have a Norg live in person.
Oh my god, my mind is blown, dude. Hey.
Oh man.
And I gotta go. Okay, thanks. Bye.
That was amazing. I love him. Love that guy. And that's why I'm going to buy him this game. So he'll talk to me about it.
He seriously cameo just to reference Wet Pancakes and Bounce.
He joined to say hi to Big Adam quick. So.
He's really some, beautiful.
We got some Wet Pancakes out of it.
Hell yeah.
Oh, shit. So you liked it, Brooke? Yeah.
I loved it. Final note on this game. I think it's a fantastic game. Final note on this. If you play this and you try to come to me and tell me kitchen work is unskilled labor, I'm going to slap you. But it's because I know that you don't even think that anymore. I know you don't even believe that after playing this game. So why would you even lie? Oh, and all the recipes are real and you will learn how to cook by playing this game. Okay, review over.
I don't believe you that you would slap them. I think you would stab them because you have a knife.
Whoa, so true.
Yeah, but that's a quality cooking knife. You don't want to get some jerk's blood all over
that's
it.
That's when you use a fork.
Yeah. You don't just... Quality cooking knives don't just grow on trees, you know.
No, you're going to stab is a stab, so find something sharp and stab. Use a spoon if you have to. Make it hurt. I don't care. Next game to talk about is Dakar Desert Rally, developed by Saber Porto, published by Saber Interactive, released October 4th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Dakar Desert Rally is the biggest off-road rally racing adventure ever developed. Experience the speed and excitement of the largest rally race on the planet, featuring a wide variety of licensed vehicles, from motorcycles, cars, trucks, quads, and SVs. Big Adam, tell us, what is Dakar Desert Rally?
It is a racing game that I was really hoping for a lot more out of. This one was actually kind of a bummer, I gotta be honest. It's a very good arcadey, you know, desert racing game. But the problem with it is it crashes lot. Which was a real big bummer. And the most I could deduce out of this was it wasn't even throwing me an error or anything like that. What it would do is, in the loading screens, it plays these FMVs that are of, you know, the full rendered quality. And sometimes those videos just don't play. But the game doesn't know what to do in the meantime. So it just hangs there and you can't do anything. So you have to like force close the game and do it again. And I ran into that problem with four different missions using four different types of vehicles. And it was just a real big bummer.
Oh man.
The stuff that I did get to play, I got to play a bunch of the free roam, which is how I got to explore a lot of the map. The map
that is a huge map. It is.
It's unbelievable. It's actually unbelievable how big a map it is. And it's all open world. So in free roam, you can go anywhere. But it's like the Dakar race. I forgot what desert it's actually in. Probably the Dakar desert. And it's the whole thing. It's not just like video games scaled down. It's not just like a portion of it or just certain places of it where they do races. Like in free roam, they made the whole desert.
Yeah.
And you can just go out there and drive it in any of the vehicles that are available. And it was wild. In free roam, there's a treasure chest system where you unlock some pretty cool stuff. The only problem is you don't unlock anything until you get 9 chests. And... oh my God, are they far away?
Oh, they're so far
away. In some cases, 30, 40 miles for real away. And you are just hauling in these vehicles in a straight line for 10, 15, 20 minutes sometimes. It's crazy.
I thought the worst part of that was they have this huge open world and there's really nothing to do in it. Aside from look for treasure chests.
Yeah.
And they have icons on your mini map saying, oh, there's one in this direction. Like there's one highlighted. I'm like, oh, maybe that's the closest one. So I started driving to it And it took me fucking forever. And I realized when I opened up the map later that I passed like four other ones on the way to this one. So I don't know why it chose that one to highlight.
I don't know. It seems it seems like it wants you to go in a specific pattern to get like different chests and the different flagged areas that you can like launch from.
Yeah.
But like I don't know. It was
Impressively large. It's impressively open, but impressively empty.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, right? It's a desert.
Yeah.
So, you can't expect much out of a gigantic huge desert. So as far as gameplay is concerned, everything feels really washy. Everything feels kind of like you're on a sheet of ice at all times. And I get that they're trying to do sand traction, and that's going to be very hard to do in a video game.
Yeah.
Very, very few games have gotten it actually correct. And this isn't, you know, what I think driving something like a four-wheeler in sand would be. I have done that in real life. I know what it feels like. So like it's honestly in this game, they kind of missed the mark on the traction physics. The positives are the game is gorgeous. It's unbelievably pretty. The animations that they put in are really great. The voice acting, the presentation of everything is stunning. It's really cool and really pretty and super fun to watch. And kind of really fun to watch the opening intro and everything that they did, like all artistically, it's just the game. It hangs. Yeah. It hangs a bunch and that stinks. And then like, I hate to just kind of bag on this game because I really appreciate them giving us a chance to take a look at it. But like, I even tried to go into multiplayer, and the only multiplayer option that I was able to find was like 1v1 races. But I even gave it kind of a shadow of a doubt. I went through all of the different classes, the car, the truck, the side-by-side, the quad, the motorcycle, and I gave all of them 15 minutes in open lobbies that were public with zero restriction to get anybody to play at random, and I never found somebody to play online with.
Ouch.
So the online community is just not there.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it's just a bummer because the game is so pretty. It's so pretty. And another thing I wanted to note is the sounds in it are spot on, which is crazy. Good example of that is not only like the four-wheelers and side-by-sides, which actually they both use motorcycle engines, so they both kind of sound the same. They do actually sound like their real-life counterparts. One thing I was telling Joe about the other day, and I didn't get into this level of detail while we were watching wrestling, but not only does the big diesel, like, dump trucks without the dump back on them, basically, sound like a diesel truck, but, like, you can also hear, like, specific things that I kind of listen to as, like, a big gear nerd. You can hear the turbo whine. You can hear the turbo blow off between shifting gears. You can hear when you're in the final gear, you can hear the transmission's final drive spinning up faster. It was just like really cool nuances and touches they put into the game. It's a really cool product. It just doesn't function the way they intended it to. And that, in my opinion, that's the biggest bummer because they put a lot of effort into this. It's very clear that they put a ton of effort into it.
Any camels?
I didn't see any.
It's a big desert. There could be.
It's true. I'm very far from exploring the whole thing.
I didn't run into any of the crashing issues that you did on Xbox. I'm guessing it's some kind of PC coding or encoding, rendering, whatever.
It's gotta be.
I don't know the technicalities, but it worked.
Yeah, like there's no way on console it would have passed cert if it would have crashed the way it does on PC. So like there's no doubt in my mind on console that it probably runs a bit better than it does on PC.
Yeah.
But my experience with PC with the even with fully upgraded drivers and a fully upgraded copy of the game, it was just I couldn't get the video crashes to stop.
Yeah, I got into a bunch of races. I performed the best with trucks. I tried using the rally cars, and it just felt like I was racing on ice the whole time. Yeah. I would spin out constantly, and it just
very washy. I have a feeling that game was very specifically programmed to be played with a steering wheel and pedal setup.
Probably.
The controller control, the amount of control that you have with a controller is non-existent. It's very, 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 very hard.
Yeah.
I would say, games on the market right now for $40, Joe?
Is that correct? The game's sitting at $39.99. What are your thoughts on it?
I can't. I can't with a good conscience. I just can't. Spend the money on one of their products that they also gifted us, a game called Redout 2. That game actually slaps, like, hard. That game rules. It's basically it's Redout 2. I don't know if it's on consoles. I know it's on PC, obviously.
Pretty sure it's on, like, console.
It's like an F-Zero GX clone.
Yeah, it's on everything. PlayStation, Xbox, dude, Switch.
Support this developer by buying Redout. That game slaps. I agree. That game is hard, Carnage. You are not wrong. It is hard to control, but that game is fun. And you want to talk about pretty? Oh, my gravy. That game is absolutely gorgeous. And I support Saber. Support that company by buying Redout 2. Let Dakar do the thing that it's doing.
Maybe they'll fix it. So
maybe.
But it came out in October and it is now March. So my hopes aren't too high that they'll figure out what the problem is. But
we still love you, Saber.
Yeah. Adam, thank you as always for coming on, hanging out. Before we let you get going, it is a very important week for us wrestling fans. Tim,
oh my Jiminy Christmas,
we got some WrestleCast we got to take care of. We're gonna dedicate like 5 minutes or so to wrestling, so everyone else can mute and like relax for a few.
Done and done.
Ring of Honor's this weekend. What do you guys think?
That card be awesome. for a Ring of Honor card is so insane. Oh, I can't wait. It's gonna be great. It's going to be so good.
It's actually had a month of television build, so that's pretty good, too.
Yep. I am.
And they're taping an episode on Wednesday, so it'll be a new episode on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
We have Dynamite on Wednesday. We have Ring of Honor on Thursday. We have SmackDown and Rampage on Friday, as well as the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. Saturday is the NXT pay-per-view and WrestleMania Night 1. And then Sunday's WrestleMania Night 2. When is the Impact show?
I think it's Thursday.
Oh, Jesus.
I believe it could be Thursday as well. Yeah.
There are 75 wrestling events happening in Los Angeles this weekend.
Good God.
It is nearly around the clock. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure PWG is throwing a show. I know GCW has a show because I think there might be a pay-per-view.
Well, no, Maki Death Kill. Nick Gage, Maki Ito.
Ah, God. Dude, pro wrestling that has nothing to do with WWE is so good right now.
Dude, like, it's Joey Janela's so wrestling good. Kota Ibushi this weekend. It's insane.
What even is? You know
how
what I mean?
That a thing? Like, how did that become a thing?
Hey, he doesn't fuck around with his spring break show.
He doesn't.
No, he doesn't. He goes really hard with.
There's a blood sport show this weekend.
That's right. Mox was talking about the blood sport show.
Oh, this God. Weekend. Vikingo's on spring break. He's wrestling Mike Bailey.
Well, oh, remember, Lord. Vikingo and Commander are going at it.
Oh, yeah, on Friday. And then the next. Wait a second. It's the same fucking day.
Oh, my Lord. They're just packing shit in.
That's how it goes. That's how it goes.
WrestleMania weekend. Leave, that's how it
they
is.
They leave one show and they go. They wrestle like 4 or 5 times a day if they're booked and multiple shows. It's wrestling literally almost around the clock. It's insane.
Yeah. Look when the Hardys returned a few years ago to WWE. They lost the titles to the Bucks, and then like the next day they debuted at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah,
they're just multiple shows and one big ass crazy wrestling weekend, and I can't wait to share it with you two. It's going to be a good weekend.
Yeah, dude. Thursday is going to be a tough day. Like, not like huge big emotional tough, but like it's just going to be a long day of doctor's appointments for me. Mm-hmm. So like coming home after getting done with all that crap and just nerding out with wrestling fam, that's going to be the shit. I can't wait. It's going to be so good.
What time?
And Tim, before that, we get Wednesday.
Tim, you're on Honor Club for a little bit now. What time do the Ring of Honor episodes drop on Thursday?
I believe they drop at 7.
I was going to say, it's either 7 or 8.
Just like Dark does.
Yeah.
I wonder if I could bump the show to 10 this week. Jacob, Aki, what do you think?
I don't care. What? Do whatever.
Jacob's not even.
This is a very big week for wrestling.
I know it's a wrestling thing. You want to bump the time. That's fine. I'm good. Whenever is good with me. Hell, we can bump it to another day if you need be.
It just gets worse.
It just gets worse. It's crazy. This weekend just escalates until it all fizzles on Sunday.
Jacob, you could do in 10 o'clock on Thursday instead of 9.
I guess.
Okay, good. You'll be high either way. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's, I think,
rude. I'm joining in that one too.
it might not be rude, but incorrect.
Actually, yeah, you guys realize, I'm sober on most shows, right?
I'm not.
No.
And me and you are very different people.
I mean, I'm not right now, but, most shows I am.
I mean, it's not Thursday.
Yeah, hey, Big Adam, true. What are you doing on April 20th? Would you like to join a show with us that night?
Oh, God.
Oh, wait. Oh, no. We're recording that night, too? Shit.
I'm going to have to give you a hard maybe, because it depends on whether or not I have friends in town.
Gotcha.
You know,
if we have
company, then
you are welcome to join us and get crazy with us. But I think we should probably move on to the rest of our reviews. Adam, love having you on. We'll have to get you back on again soon. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
Racing games rule, and people that don't like them make me very sad.
Amen.
And
I make you sad. It's my honor.
If you don't like racing games, it's because you haven't found one for you yet. That's all I got to say. Enjoy your evening, friends. Spread love, not nonsense, and carry on.
Nonsense.
Those are good words.
However, there is a game called Race Drivin' on the Super Nintendo that was terrible. So,
that game ruled.
In the arcades.
Really? Like Race Drivin'?
Dude, I like racing games.
He doesn't care what it is. If it has a car and it goes vroom, he likes.
Wait, hold on. Race Driving. Let me look this up.
Specifically Race Driving on the SNES.
Okay, first off, that's a terrible port of a fantastic arcade game.
Yeah, I specifically didn't say the arcade game.
Well, okay.
That's true. So he did specify the SNES.
You did find the bad port. I give you full credit for that. That's fair. But Hard Driving is probably one of the most accurate driving simulators made in the 80s, period. Full stop, period.
You like Shrek Smash and Crash Racing on the Game Boy Advance?
Well, first off, if you don't like that game, you're a monster, and I stand firm by
that. Is that the kart game?
Yes.
Oh, I
played. No, that one was definitely Monster Truck and
Bulldozers. Yeah, no, that one, it's more Demolition Derby. Yeah, you're right.
Okay. I was going to say, Swamp I played Kart. Shrek Kart.
Yeah, Shrek's Swamp Kart Speedway is the
other. Yeah, that's, I played that's
that. That was right. Okay. I mean, it's a clone. I mean, that's all it is. It's
trying to test my knowledge of these racing games out here. Come on now. Hey. Come on now.
Carnage is calling one out for you, Adam. What do you?
I know Mario Kart and Forza.
Wait, which one?
Yaris.
Yaris on Xbox. Oh, I never played that.
No.
Oh, that.
I honestly never played that one.
Oh, we got to get Yaris you set up with that.
That was a real funny one. Yeah.
Is that on cloud streaming?
No, it is fully delisted. which is funny because it was a free game. I think I can give you the file though, and you can play it on your 360 because I'm pretty sure Yaris was just an unsecured download file. Like it was no,
people are playing it somehow.
No licensing on it whatsoever since it was free.
Well, I'm telling you, if it's got that big of a fan base behind it where it's still pumping out videos and it's an Xbox game, then
sometimes people stream and make videos of stuff for different reasons than that they enjoy them.
Very true.
Well, okay, you win that one. That's fair. That's fair. It's, I don't have a good counter argument for
having
that.
Having said, I have played it, and it isn't the worst that I've played. So it's not even all that bad. Yeah. It's just bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's a free game. I mean, I don't. It's one of those, like, what do you expect kind of things. Yeah.
I mean, the Doritos games are... We're getting really off topic here. We have more games to talk about tonight.
All I'm saying is Burger King Kart Racer for 360 was the shit. Oh, yeah. Mock strike. Mic drop. I'm out!
Don't drop your mic.
Next game to talk about tonight is 9 Years of Shadows, developed by Howard Studios, published by Freedom Games, released March 27th on Steam for $19.99. Fight to bring beautiful colors back to a handcrafted world of darkness and discover the story of Europa, a young warrior, and her ghostly childhood companion, Apino. Tim, tell us about your time with 9 Years of Shadows.
Well, it's not much of a fight. I mean, you get through the tutorial and then the color's all back.
Oh.
Yep.
Well, $20. What do you think?
No. credits roll. Done.
I loved it.
9 Years of Shadow. What we got going on here is a Metroidvania. You might have heard of the genre. It's like Metroid and Castlevania. Some of the Castlevanias, anyways. We're doing some 2D exploration and backtracking and finding some new abilities to let you get into some new areas and do this, that, and the other thing. There's a lot of these. It's a very saturated genre, well-worn at this point. So you got to be doing something really special to stand out in that genre, and this game is not doing that.
That's a bummer. It looks really good.
It does. That is the best part of the game, is there the art looks real good. It has a really nice style to it. There's an elegance to it. There's just great detail to the characters and the backgrounds and the world. There's some good music to it. There's just like a classy, classical music theme to the game, kind of. And that there's members of this orchestra that are scattered about the world. That you'll find them, and they'll give you some shitty side quest to do, really. None of them are that great. It's like, go here, kill this guy. And then I'll go get back with my band. So you're like assembling an orchestra. Like, the stage is, exists outside of the laws of space and time because it shows up in multiple places. Which is good because you don't want to have to be trying to get back to it every single time you need to, because that's where you buy upgrades. Which you won't be doing that much, but still. I guess the gimmick, there's a couple things going on here. So as you traverse the world, you'll find a few different armors, which are color-coded, and will reflect different shields the enemies have. And it's like, if you match the colors, you do more of the damage. But also they will let you traverse different parts of the environment. There's one for going underwater. There's one for going through poisonous areas. The water one lets you turn into like a little mer person, and then you move differently. But otherwise, there's really not much. There's no wild differences between them. Like your swipes of your weapon remain the same. That does not change. You just have a very basic combo. And a strong attack, and that's it. You also get you shoot like a ball of energy, which is important because you need to, one, it acts as a range attack, which is dope. And you have an energy meter, more on that in a bit. But you'll need it against, I guess, bosses in particular is where it really comes up. Though there's certain enemies they'll have like a little crystalline formation on them, and you have to use your energy balls to destroy parts of bosses to do damage or just kill the enemies that are out and about in the world. But really, that like the actual, none of the enemies have like terribly interesting designs. Some of them are, in fact, I would call a slog to fight against. And that there's just big beefy dudes with shields. It's like, okay, well, I go in and I slash you 3 times. Oh, you're rearing back. Okay, I'm going to use my little back dash, and you're going to slash, and you're going to miss. And then I'll go back in, and they're just taking a lot of hits. It's just like, okay, yeah, sure, it's fine. But like I said, your weapon attack is the same throughout the game. It does not evolve or change, despite the fact that you are picking up armors, which one would hope would give you fantastical new abilities more than just being able to walk in areas that would otherwise poison you to death. And will, because if you're not paying attention, you can just wander into the room and be like, why am I dying? Why am I oh, I'm dead. It kills you very fast. Because you don't have a lot of health in this game. And here's this is what really drove me up a wall in this game. So you get like a couple pips of health. You could take two hits, right? But then you have this nice blue meter that acts as both the energy for shooting things and like your shields. So you can take a couple hits and it'll pop off this meter. And if you run out of meter, then you take your actual damage and you take two hits and then you're fucking dead. Unless you upgrade it, of which there's like you have to find, you know, five dingle dongles to take to some guy with a loot to expand your health. Dongles. But you can only do that twice, so it's not like you're going to be a big beefy beefingson by the end of the game. Like, you are frail no matter what when you do not have that blue bar protecting your life.
You are not a big meaty man slapping meat.
And the fact that you're, you know, you need this meter to shoot things, and it is integral for, like, at boss battles, you know, they involve this, like, okay, there's always a moment where you got to, like, use that to shoot something. So it's depleting, like, your ability to take a hit. And if you don't have it, like, you're naked. But the good news, question mark, is it's pretty easy to restore if you're not under too much duress, which are things that boss fights do not offer. So it's like, okay, so you're running around out in the world, you use that to kill some things, you're out of shields, or you got hit, whatever. You just gotta, like, you hug your little buddy. That's what it is, a fly song. It's literally a little stuffed animal that is what it is. So yeah, you give that sucker a hug, which is really weird, because just total aside here, I'm playing that Bayonetta Origins game that also has a stuffy that you hug to restore magic. That's really weird that those both came out like in the same month. Yeah, so you can give your little stuffy a hug. It just takes a moment. It reminds me of just like restoring a pip of your health in Hollow Knight. You got to sit there and like hold the button. It also doesn't activate right away, or like if you're in the middle of animation or something, just kind of like how it does in Hollow Knight, which is also something that pisses me off in Hollow Knight. Sometimes you just got to be standing still, hit the button right, and it's like, okay, it works. And it's not that big a deal. It just irritates me. It's just funny. It's the same thing. But, and that'll restore some of that blue bar. It's like, okay, cool. So if you have a moment to stand around and just refill it, it's like, great. Yeah, I'll just go through the world and I'll zip, zap, zop everything I see, and then just stand still for a second, hug my little buddy, and then I got a little more energy. But they also realize that is not something you can do all the time. So they do a thing where you run out, either by, you know, from using your magic or by getting hit, it'll pop up like a little active reload meter. Remember this thing, which pops up in games from time to time, most famously in Gears of War, where it's like, oh, you'd run out of ammo, and when you'd go to reload, there would be a little, you know, zone on the bar where you had to hit the button at the right time and it would reload faster and power up your bullets. So it does that. I think it's awful in this, the way that it's implemented, because your life is on the line and you don't always have a good sense of like, oh, I'm about to run out of magic, or oh, I'm like, you're never in the mindset of like, oh, I'm about to get hit and lose all my life. You know, so in the moment that it happens, it's like, oh, shit, like that meter just popped up. But maybe you're not even like kind of, you know, I'm not focusing on where my character is. And like something that makes active reload work in, you know, shooters like that is that it is, as far as I can remember, it's a consistent thing for every weapon that you're using. So there's like a rhythm to it. And this, the hot zone you need to hit, it's all over the damn place. It could be almost immediately once the meter pops up. It makes it very easy to miss. And it changes every time, which makes
it... Oh, that would piss me off.
So you bad. Know what it did to me? It pissed me off. Funny you should mention that. Yeah, it drove me nuts, especially, you know, in boss fights, which are long and have multiple stages and take a while to, like, learn the patterns. And it's like, okay, I'm doing well. And then you take, like, one hit towards the end. And it's like, oh, shit, my shields are down. I have to, like, oh, and I missed the reload. So now I got to stand still and hug my buddy. But this thing's not giving me a chance to stand still. And it's like, oh, I died. Now I'm back to the save point, which was not out right outside the boss room. So I have to go through all these beefy enemies in the world again and, like, fight them and go through and do back to the other thing. And just, now I'm back here. It's just like, oh, my God. It just, like, usually I like this type of system. But
the way I think it would have made sense if, like, each armor had its own consistent hot zone on the bar or something like that. Or if they just had you have more health and just didn't tie the two together. But even, you know, casting all that aside, there's just not a whole lot going on in this game. Once you get past, like, the look and the sound of it, like I mentioned, like, the combat never really changes. You do not get a ton of crazy new abilities. Yes, you get a double jump eventually. Yes, of course you do. But you're not really expanding your arsenal of weapons. The upgrades that are available are very limited and tied to finding items. You're not like upgrading all willy-nilly. It's like they're very few and far between. And you just kind of go through, and the game's like 5 hours long-ish. And it's just kind of like, meh, okay. And then it's just kind of eh when you're just going around, and then when you're in a boss fight having to try to like juggle this this system of shields and life and energy, then it's just infuriating. And like I said, it's a saturated genre out there. There's so many Metroidvanias. You really got to do something to really stand out and pop and like get, you know, like, I mean, you know, I played Eldorand like a month ago, and that is way better and much easier to recommend than this, which is not something I'm going to be recommending to people.
Well, I guess we'll just get to the question then. It's $20. What's your verdict?
No, I cannot recommend 9 Years of Shadow, unfortunately, despite how good it looks. It does not have the chops to back it up.
Well, if it ever gets 9 years of updates, we'll check it out again.
Hey, anything could be great after 9 years of updates. Look at No Man's Sky.
True.
I still got to go back and play that game more. I played the launch No Man's Sky, and I enjoyed it. I would love that game now that it's actually good. There's probably almost two. I did start a game, like, I don't know, a couple years in, and it was just, like, so unrecognizable. It's like, oh, I'm going through, like, base building tutorials. I'm just like, I don't even. And they just keep adding. I gotta get back to it at some point, because now it seems like it's the game I always wanted it to be.
Oh man, that is it for you, Tim.
Yep. Yeah. For more of me bitching about Metroidvanias, tune in next week. We'll see how that goes.
Oh no.
We'll see how we're not talking right now. Me and one of the games I'm reviewing. The other one is excellent, so I will have good things to say about one game. But I can't say anything about either of them.
You'll have to PM us and let us know, because two Metroidvanias in a week? Like, I don't even know if those are. Like, the magic
of embargoes.
Yeah, can't talk about the one for a few more days, so don't ask.
Either of them. Like, I'll get fucking shot if I talk about one of them.
Yeah,
like,
there are snipers.
Oh, shit, what happened?
Yeah, there exactly. Are just like...
Trade snipers.
Yeah.
Don't give our shit away. Yeah,
I'll see everyone again next week. Same time, same place. But now I'm going to go to bed because it's 11. Jesus. Oh my.
Nighty night.
Okay, all right. Yep. Good night.
It's not 12, Jesus. His final words were 11, Jesus, as opposed to 12, Jesus.
All right. Next up is Chia, developed by Awaseb, published by Kepler Interactive, released March 21st on PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. A tropical open world adventure: climb, glide, swim, and sail your boat around a beautiful archipelago in this physics-driven sandbox. Take control of any animal or object you can find and jam on your fully playable ukulele. Brooke and Purnell, tell me about this game.
Well, you may have already heard about this game already. A lot of people are comparing it to Breath of the Wild. Now, I'm not going to say this game is like Breath of the Wild, because I have some very mixed feelings about that comparison. But I will say, if you enjoy Breath of the Wild, you should probably go ahead and pick up this game. It's really good, and it scratched a lot of the same itches. If you were like, wow, I love Breath of the Wild because it's a giant, living, breathing world with physics engines and cooking and diving, exploring, petting all the animals, dog, cats, bugs, fish... Wait, I'm not talking about Breath of the Wild anymore. I'm talking about this game. Sorry, I got confused. You know, we talked a lot about the cultural...
You can pet bugs.
Yeah, and it's freaking awesome. And you can pet a fish, and if you're like, wait, the fish, how did it get here? Did it flop out of the water? You can pick that fish up and help it go to its home, and it's a really special,
I
nice
love that
moment,
you can pet the fish out of the water. Like, you're dying. Let me pet you.
Yeah. And it's like, that's when he needs it the most. You know what
can
I mean?
Can you pet the fish while they're in the water?
Yes.
Okay, I love this game. All right.
Pretty sweet. And the diving's so cool. Like, it honestly reminds me, what's the first diving game everybody played here? What's the first game you play where you get to dive in the water and go underneath it and explore, like, an underwater world in addition to an overground?
Nuts. I was going to say Track Field 2, but then you said Explore, so now I don't know anymore.
For me, it would be Mario Galaxy, for example. So something like that.
Mario 64. Duh.
Yeah. Why not
realize it? The original Sonic.
Mario 64. Dire Ducks.
Yeah, Mario.
Dude, I had so much fun with that. But like, so, you know, we talked a lot about the cultural significance of this game and where it comes from and what it means to the developers. We talked about that a lot in depth when we last talked about this game on the show when we were doing the early review copy, I think, from the Epic Store. I'm not going to go too deep into that because a lot like Chef Life, this game is doing so much. We do not have the damn time. So just go listen to the other episode if you'd like to hear more about that, in my opinion. Some things that have changed. They've changed the whole opening, lots of cinematics and like lead up to walk you through how the game begins. And there is a lot to introduce you to. I love the opening they added where the old lady is telling stories to the kids on the island about you. That definitely wasn't in the version we covered a while back. Incredible touch. This feels now like a fun anime and like Disney movie to me. Like the plot and cinematics of this game just feel almost like a Ghibli movie to me. Love just the feeling this game opens up with. The music starts. We're seeing this beautiful world ready for us to explore. Some ladies like, let me tell you a story about a girl named Chia. And I'm over here like I'm already crying. I don't even know what's going on yet. But it's just a vibe. Freaking out.
By the way, if people want to hear our previous coverage on Chia, the preview that we did, it is episode 841.
Oh, nice. I'm actually going to write that down.
I have a question. Is this coming to Xbox or
anything? Not too sure. Right now it is PC and PlayStation.
Hope it comes to Xbox. Review it.
Chia.
This, thank you. So over here. Okay, so she's like, what story do y'all want to hear? And they're like, oh, we want to hear the one about Chia. She's like, wow, I've already told you this one about the little girl Chia like a million times. You still want to hear it again. And then it opens up, and you're Chia, and you're walking around, and you control this character who can just interact with almost every part of this world in this game. It's your birthday, your dad gets you a slingshot and a hang glider type thing, a la Zelda Breath of the Wild. If you see a ball on the beach, you can play with it. And this game is just chock full of like physics engine goodness. And it's not so riddle heavy like Breath of the Wild. It's more like you can choose to interact with things. And there's a lot of different almost mini game type experiences you can have. But it's not like, oh, every time I can interact with the environment or use magical powers or elemental powers or something, there's some riddle to solve. But when I'm done with this area, I'm done. It's a really organic.
Thanks, Jacob.
Jacob, what are you doing?
Sorry, I thought my mic was off.
Oh, you good?
No worries.
All good, man. No worries. So,
oh no, I'm worried. I am worried. Jacob, are you okay?
No.
What's wrong, Jacob?
I accidentally yawned with my mic on.
Oh no, you're all good, man. We literally love you, dude. Okay, so it's fine to get lost and distracted in this game, even though there's a shitload of different things that they teach you at the beginning. You might be a little overwhelmed, but it's fine to get lost and distracted in this game and just wander around, which is great news for Brookies. How are you feeling about this game so far, Pernell? I got more to say, but I want to give you a chance.
Oh, honestly, you hit a lot of the notes for me. My case on this title is I do enjoy, like originally I was concerned, despite our earlier coverage of the game, that I wouldn't really have that desire to really do much in it, specifically because, you know, it doesn't have that, like, what's the word? I don't want to say killer instinct of an adventure, but, like, there's an antagonist, but you're not running around fighting monsters and getting cool weapon upgrades and gear like a typical game of that style. Like, in fact, that's part of why I dislike Breath of the Wild, contrary to the world's opinion. But in the case of this game, it's just the combination of the level of endearment they give to the main character, the world you're exploring in general, and quite frankly, it's beating a dead horse, but just the whole soul jumping mechanic. I love the soul jumping. I like the idea of leaping in the air, jumping into a stone, having the stone roll down a hill real fast, leaping in the air, soul throw the rock at a random object, and then just jump into a bird and just start flying around with the bird. Like, it's just, there's a lot of fun to be had there. I will say, one primary thing that drives me nuts, though I do acknowledge that it was intentional, and it's just something you get used to over time, is how the mapping works. we've gotten so used to video games just saying, hey, here you are, and here's the waypoint. Just go to the waypoint. It's easy to find. This game treats it in an interesting styling where she has never been to the islands you're exploring. She's going there for the very first time, just as you, the player, are going there for the first time. She's given a compass. The compass is meant to help you orient your direction, north, south, east, and west. And if you come across a point where you want to, I don't know, you're just out in the wilderness, like, I got to find this thing I wanted to get to. If you bring up your map, you get a general idea of where you last were. So last were being like if you went to like a signpost or a campfire, a specific thing. And if you were to, say, hit the button to kind of zero in on yourself, Chia will kind of give a bit of a dialogue of the area she's in, and you'll get a large circle saying, you're somewhere in this area. Because she herself only knows that she is somewhere in that area. So the game emphasizes the need for you to, A, find the yell points that are hidden throughout the maps, which will allow you to kind of make objects appear, like objects of interest appear on the map, and then use like pinpoints to be like, okay, I should be here. I'm going to go this way and make a marker right here. So I'll basically keep track of where you're going. So
I can understand why they do that and the reasons behind, like, the authenticity and makes it more real. Like, just show me where the fuck I am, please. Just show me where the fuck I am. Don't show me where I was 5 minutes ago. I know where I was. I don't know where I am. That's why I'm looking at a map to find out where I am.
And that's the thing. Like, it's a weird thing where, I mean, if it becomes a thing where enough people are upset about it, they may well just do a patch or something. Yeah. But for me, it's the sort of thing where it's like, I'm so used to waypoints and all that junk. And you've heard me on previous episodes outright even start to kind of complain about that. Not because I dislike it, because it works. But because just like how the world has gotten used to the GPS, what ends up happening is you get so used to just looking at your map tell you where to go that you spend less time looking at the screen, actually progressing there and looking at the things you're running past as you make your progress to the waypoint. So it is something nice about being like, okay, I have to actually be aware of what I'm doing. I have to be aware of the things I'm running past so that I can at least be like, even if it's simply saying, hey, I'll stay on this road to go from here to there because the map shows me this road connects these two points. And if I want to go off the map, I just need to know I went east. So then I just reverse course when I'm done, you know? It's the best way to put it is it works a skill both for fun and also just general flexing of it that doesn't get a lot of use these days because of technology, both in-game and out-of-game.
There's a reason why we evolved past maps and to GPS.
Never! Because but, the moment your signal goes,
I literally have two notes written down for this game. I don't think I put as much time into the game as you two, but I did put a little bit of time in. My two notes are map, last known location, which we discussed, and motherfucking rock stacking.
So I'm gonna be real. I hated the fuck out of rock stacking. I hated my life. I was like, I want it to be over. Luckily, you know, after you do the first one, you can turn it off. Aki, did you play?
No, I've done it in real life.
Oh, okay.
This isn't real life, Aki. This is a video game.
Well, it should be that much harder in a video game.
You'd be surprised.
You'd be surprised.
But
anyway.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying you can skip that if you want after the first time if you don't want to do that scene. And you can do that with a lot of the little, hey, do the interaction scene. If you don't want to learn one more weird thing to do in this game or one more mini game, like you don't have to if you want to. But that first time, man, that was a long night.
I'm never skipping my Guitar Freak's ukulele.
Ooh, that must have been an update then, because the rock stacking, I was able to skip that first one.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool. You know, and I might have just missed that.
When you're on that the dock thing with the guy.
Yeah.
Glasses.
Let's talk about the guy. This plot is real as fuck. I'm just going to give us the intro here. Your dad's being kidnapped away on a helicopter by like magical ribbon creatures and this dude in sunglasses. And you start running up and your eye starts glowing. And you go to like stab him in the face with his own knife using the powers of your mind. And he's like, wait, who the heck are you? And it's clear by the way he's been looking for your dad. He did not know your dad had a kid. He's very interested in this. Now we have a supervillain who seems to know how to do magic, and I feel they think this is our first magical experience in the game until we get to learning how to soul jump later, like Purnell's talking about, which, if I'm correct, I think the first time we learn how to soul jump, we do it into a coconut, and we turn into a coconut, and since we're all alone and learning we have powers and we're confused, your character, you know, even though this is done in their native language, is translated, and she's like, dang, what just happened to me is this puberty, and she's like terrified. It's a very universally like funny moment, and I enjoyed that, and I thought it was a good example. Though. It's so cute, and like there's nothing like adult about any of the of this game other than like some of the more violent themes you will come into contact with. And I just thought it was really, they really kind of showcase how universal some types of humor can be, especially like coming of age stuff. So yeah, there's a lot going on. We've got tropical island, extreme open world crafting, slingshotting, gliding, diving, swimming, petting a variety of animals. Now we have like a almost Lopan type supervillain. Like, sign me up.
It's a pretty crazy game. It's a lot deeper than I thought it was going to be based on the preview. There's a whole lot more meat than I was expecting. I sincerely hope this hits more platforms. PlayStation has it locked down right now as an exclusive. It is available on the PS Plus extra tier if you are a subscriber to that. But it is $29.99. What are your thoughts?
I think this is a wonderful game, and I think that the map complaint is valid. I think a lot of people will probably feel that about this game, and I definitely am not going to say I disagree with that. For me, I didn't mind, and I feel like the longer you spend in the game and in the world, the less bad it is, and I ended up really enjoying it. That's really a toss-up for me, whether or not that pisses me off in a game or whether it makes me feel like the world is more alive, and for me personally it was more of the latter. So I think as a matter of taste, some people are going to really, really, really love that, and some people are going to not. To if the devs happen to listen to this and y'all do patch it and add that option, consider letting turn it off if I want,
because
y'all are really good at letting me turn off all the stuff I don't want about this game, so it doesn't become overwhelming, because there's so much, like, we haven't even talked about all the mechanics in this game, and we never will. And it's not just it's not just like an old-timey island setting. Like, one of the first places you go to is a huge city, and we've got skyscrapers, and we have like a Studio Ghibli kind of mountain with a floating top, and things that are like at once super modern and realistic, and another way like not as they seem, and very like magical realism. And this game, it's an intimidating project, and I can't believe they freaking did it. Like, I think they knocked it out of the park. So for me, this is a 1,000% buy it. I think it's gorgeous.
Cool. For now, your thoughts?
I'm on the same page as her. Hell, she even got down to defending the freaking map, which I'm A-OK about. So
I'm not.
Yeah.
Y'all know, you know,
when I disagree one, with Joe.
Fuck the map.
Two against one in your face. But the game is quality. I'm sure someone could go on there and boot this game up and be like, well, there's some rugged edges over here. I'm not that guy. I enjoyed my experience with the world. I enjoyed the fact that I didn't feel stressed during my time adventuring and exploring this place.
Yeah, same.
And quite frankly, I have enough stress in my life, both in games and out of games, that sometimes I do want a game where, even though the actual circumstances of the adventure are dire, the experience of the adventure is not.
It's so chill. I'm like, damn, I gotta find my dad before he's murdered, but first I'm gonna pet every crab and insect on this beach and maybe find him a new home while I'm at. Like, it was so much fun. And y'all know when we do these panel reviews, if I disagree with you and I'm like, nah, I think the developers meant it like that, I will. So I really, once again, don't think the map thing's invalid, but personally, I'm glad they did it. I don't really have any complaints about this game.
Cool. All right, well, Brooke, that is it for you.
It sure is. Time to heat up my frozen dinner and make some hot tea and go to sleep.
What about heat up the frozen tea and make some hot dinner?
Ooh, I like the way you think.
Frozen. We'll
tea. See? There it is.
This is why we keep
it. There it is.
Boom, there it is. All right. Brooke, any final words?
Thanks for listening to my two kind of longer-ish reviews. I have been given a beautiful curse by Joe, and then the last week I played two of my favorite games I've played, and it just absolutely ate my life alive, and I put so much time into it, and I just had a really good time. I felt very honored to play both of these, and I kind of felt like, damn, I can't believe I got these games for free, you know? We don't always feel that way, but I was, like, playing Chef Life. I was loving it so much. I was like, part, little tiny part of me was like, I hope Tim and Purnell don't get jealous that I got this game. I'm like, that's not real, but like, that's how much fun it was. Both these just
tell you something. Blew me away.
I think Jacob's jealous. I know he wanted that.
I'm gonna tell you.
I love that.
Now, I'm gonna tell you something.
I requested Chef Life in advance.
No, I gotta tell you.
Did I try requesting it?
Yeah, you wanted it.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. You're like, ask about this one for me, but we got.
I might buy it for you, and then you have to talk to me about it.
Oh no.
I'm just going to tell you, I hadn't heard of this game until the mentioning of the episode lineup. Hearing you talk about it, I'm jealous now, because I'm not going to talk about any of my games like that tonight. I can assure you that.
It was so hard to write the review. I was like, I'm just going to do one recipe, and it kept getting out of control. I cut it down, and I still didn't get it. Like, that was so much fun, so thanks. That's all I got to say.
Ooh, well, let's find out how Purnell handles his review, because the next game to talk about is Wolfson, Lords of Mayhem, developed and published by Wolfson Studio, released March 15th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, and PS5 for $39.99. A dynamic hack and slash with no class restrictions. Choose your path as you level up and play your character the way you want. Explore the shattered and corrupted world to uncover its ancient secrets and hidden truths. Purnell and Jacob, both of you check this one out. Who wants to start?
For now,
I can start. So I always feel weird referring to these kinds of games as hack and slashes, because it doesn't feel like one. Just like Diablo 2 or 3, for that matter, never felt like a hack and slash to me. Not as an insult or nothing, just clarification. Now, as for the game itself, you may have already guessed from what I just described, but this is pretty much the equivalent of, like, a looter combat game, where you're basically moving around on the map, 3D top down or whatever, and attacking hordes and waves of monsters for better and better loot, bigger and bigger numbers. And while I will just outright say that the narrative wasn't particularly gelling with me, though I wish it did more, but I guess that's kind of the curse of this kind of game. You get so absorbed with the idea of just, I want to get bigger numbers, that you kind of stop, kind of phase the narrative part out. I will say that the actual mechanics behind the game are actually pretty interesting compared to a lot of other games of this ilk. So, you get access to a variety of different equipment items, whether it be guns, swords, magic staffs, or what have you. And typical of these kinds of games, they all come with their variety of different buffs. The downside to it in this game, unfortunately, being that it's on a console. And, Joe, do you want to take a shot in the dark as to why it being on a console would make something about reading lots of numbers and stats on weapons difficult?
Tiny text.
Tiny text.
Yay. Exactly.
So, lots of the time, and I'm not even making this mess up, it may feel, may call me old, I don't give two shits. A lot of times I was picking equipment based on the total damage and how many buffs the weapon had.
I would just look for a green arrow. If it had a green arrow, I'd equip it. If it didn't, I just moved on.
See, I wish I thought to do that, because I didn't even do that mess. I was just like, okay, this weapon has, okay, this attack range is better, and it has five different buff typings. I can work with that. I decided not to focus too much on that until I started dealing with the tech tree, which to me is actually the real meat and potatoes of this game, but I think it makes it really cool. Well, that amongst one other thing. Typical of games like this, Diablo and the like, you end up getting classes. The class being what drives your character's stat growth and skill advancement. But in the case of this game, they did something surprisingly interesting in that the Gate of Fates, they refer to it. But it's essentially your skill tree. It's a very, very expansive grid. Think of it like kind of like the sphere grid in Final Fantasy X. But it's broken up into multiple node sections, and those node sections have multiple individual nodes that you can spend skill points on to advance. Now, when you first open this thing up, it seems pretty freaking daunting. Very daunting, in fact. But the more you look into it, the easier it is to interpret. So, for example, look at this as being like a circle that has three rings to it. The inner ring has three segments. The outer ring has, I'm not even going to count anymore, let's go with six. And then the outer ring beyond that has about probably nine or so. When you look at these ring sections, they're color-coded. So one might say soldier, and it's red. The next one might say scholar, it's purple. And the last one would be sentinel, and it's green. The name is the type of class these skills are being associated or designated to. And that's kind of flavor text more than anything. The real gimmick is the color. Because the color, even though all the different groups are like different named, the color is consistent across them all. So think of red as being like more melee focused, green being more like range focused, and purple being more magic focused. And then as you go further out, look for the next purple if you want to stick with magic. Or if you want to cross, you know, stat build, you can go for red. Have purple for magic and red skills for melee. And have a weird hybrid character. And as you branch out further, right, once you get outside of one of the circle segments, like this, into the, one of the rings, you can go to the next ring and spin it. And so you get to the point where you're like, I want to start building off of this ring instead for my next advancement. And then you can start putting skill points into that. But once you do, you kind of lock the ring because now you've committed to building out in one direction. But nonetheless, it gives you a lot more ability to more flexibility in choosing how you want to build your guy out. It's pretty freaking slick. The last thing, of course, being how I'll go ahead, Jacob.
I just want to get in one word. I mean,
no, for now, keep talking.
Damn it. But who doesn't play these games as much, I completely agree with what Purnell was saying about the skill tree. Like, when you first see it, it's very daunting. But I really appreciated how, like, you know, if you want to mix and match kind of stuff, like, you know, my guy, because, you know, I brought Lightning Bill from, or Lightning Brad from Wild Hearts over into this game. I made him go with melee, but then I had him start messing around with magic stuff too, because of course it's gonna, you know, I want everything to explode. But yeah, it's just, it's really expansive, and it's awesome. Like, I really appreciated this part of this game. So continue.
And the funny part about this too, you might be hearing us discuss skill tree, and go, wow, so this is how you get all your actual skills? That would be a lie. That's not how you get the skills at all. That's just how you get all the perks and the buffs that are applied to your stats and skills. The way actual skills are acquired in this game is also very different from what I'm used to in games like this. Typically, you'd get the skills either A, from a piece of equipment you put on, or B, from leveling up your guy and getting new skills unlocked. But in this game, you actively find skills from enemy drops, from breakables, from treasure chests. They're freaking everywhere. And when you find these skills, you can equip them. They're all based around different types of, you know, classing types, but they're described more like, you know, warrior type skills, or basically, let me think of it, like basically warrior type skills, rogue type skills, spell type skills, and then, like, I guess, like that sort of thing. Like, they're just broken up into different categories. And then when you equip them, they drain from either willpower or rage. That's being like a resource that's used for like skill usage. And as you use these skills, you'll level them up. Let me rephrase that. Not even use them, while you fight things with them equipped. So you don't have to spam the same skill over and over. Just got to have it equipped while you're fighting things. It will level up. And then as the skill levels up to certain points, you're able to equip modifiers to the skills to then make them a little bit more unique, similar to how Diablo 3 did it. How you could like kind of slot specific perks to specific skills, but you learn the new skill perks as you keep having the skill equipped and fighting monsters with it.
You mentioned Diablo, and I hate to derail the conversation, but we only have so much time on the episode, and we're like so far in the way it is. But Diablo, I think, destroyed any chance this game had of getting footing. And it's a shame because I think it's a solid game, but it came out at the same time as the Diablo beta.
Yep.
With that in mind, though, I will say this, though. I haven't tried this because you know my stance on demos most of the time. But my take is that Diablo 4 technically isn't out yet. It's just a beta, which means...
Yeah, it was just a weekend beta. It was like back-to-back weekends, and it took all the attention away from this. I haven't heard many people talking about this one, and it's a shame. I think it has a solid foundation. I do want to mention some of the issues I've had with the game.
Before we do that, hang on to that thought, because we do need to cover this statement related to what you're about to go into beforehand. So this game does have a pretty negative reputation on ye olde internets right now because of how it experienced its life as a Steam product. Before we go into our own critiques of the game from the console release, I just want to emphasize the fact that this is a different release from that in a sense. So don't necessarily just take what we're talking about and going, oh yeah, but the PC game was bad. Think of it more like we're talking about a console game, specifically, at least in my case, and likely Joe's, and I think Jacob's too. We all played on the Xbox.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So with that in mind, what were you about to say?
First thing, I hate the fact that you have to have separate online and offline characters.
Have ever said why?
I don't know.
I think it's specifically because, I mean, from what I've experienced in previous games that did it, it's because, and also keep in mind, this was originally on PC, which is where a lot of that stems from too, is the idea that when you have the online community being multiple people just joining games on a server, you run the risk of people who like hack or cheat their characters up and then joining into people's games. Yeah. So what they ended up doing, rather than have to monitor all the servers and what they just said, screw it, we're separating them. So now just keep them alone.
It sucks because I have no desire to run an offline character because I can't use it online if I want to play with one of you two. If, you know, I have to have an online character, but with that comes the fact that you have to like wait for the connection. You have to wait for it to populate a friends list. You have to wait for a lobby. You have to load the lot. Like, it's so much added waiting and loading for no reason, for no like apparent reason.
I'll say in response to that, though, obviously it's not for everybody. Well, only thing I'll say to that, though, I know this isn't for everybody because I can say personally, I rarely play through a game more than one time. I do, however, know that games of these, like, you know, these character built looter adventure games or whatnot, they generally come for the audience of people that generally play multiple times because they want multiple builds and the like. So one typical thing I've utilized, a few times I've attempted to do things like this, is I'll play single player as one character type entirely, and then when I go into multiplayer, I specialize in completely different character modeling structure. So even though I'm playing the same game, I'm playing it as two different characters, and with the friends being in there that has to help with the mobs and change the dynamic of the game, it can kind of feel like two different experiences. So
yeah, but you can do that twice. If they were shared characters, you could do the same thing.
I'm not denying that. I'm just saying that's what some people do to balance that out. It's like, okay, crap, I got to make a second character
I wouldn't defend the fact that they have separate online and offline. I think that's an archaic situation, and they should have found a better way to manage that instead of having completely separate characters. The other issue I ran into, Purnell, you showed me that you ran into this as well. Jacob, I'm not sure if you did, but some pretty bad graphical issues in spots.
Yeah. So you ended up, did you experience in a different place than I did from the screen grab?
Not from what I saw. It looked to be the same area.
Okay. Jacob, did you experience anything like that yourself?
I mean, there was a couple of sections where stuff was blurry, but I didn't know if that was the game or if it was just, you know. I don't know.
Nah, we had an issue where like one of the textures was just on a diagonal up through the entire screen.
Like it clipped?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Let me see if I can find the picture and send it to you.
I guess the best way to describe it for folks who are listening, it's almost as if somebody, like a god, showed up and took a butter knife or a cleaver to like a good chunk of the map, and what they removed just got replaced with a black void that covered up everything, including your character. So you just kind of were running to this space, and it was just darkness. And you're just throwing bullets to kill things that are in there until you got out of it. And you eventually did get out. And at one point, I was hoping, okay, well, maybe, because I'm going to tell you right now, it really took me away from the game. Like, oh, this is just a denied right off the bat because of stuff like that. That's egregious kind of stuff right there. But it took me away from the game for a while. Then I came back. The issue was gone from that section. But then I went back later still, and the issue was back again. So it's like, and that's not the only place where I experienced it either. But the problem is that there definitely needs to be a little bit more quality control. Heck, we'll also go with a lot more quality control on those situations. Because when you're charging full price for a game, especially a game that's been out on a previous system, and you could prepare for the console release by, you know, taking a few extra steps, that's kind of egregious. So I was not a fan of that at all. And I hope if they're listening to this, they acknowledge that it is a problem and they can make figure out why it's happening. Because this was in single player too. This isn't like an online issue. This is purely sitting in my living room playing by myself. And the game's installed on my hard drive too. Did you have
an online character or an offline character?
This was an offline character. That's what I was saying. Like there, I can't. There can't be blamed on like you know the server issues or nothing. This is literally Xbox running textures on this thing.
Yeah,
just didn't cut it. So they had to figure that one out. I appreciate
you named your character Red Sonja.
That's right. Been a fan since the '80s, baby. It ain't changing no time soon. But that's a fun trivia fact about me. That's what a lot.
I mean, I liked it. Honestly, like I spent more time than I expected in the character creator. I don't know. I had a lot of fun with that. I appreciated the story because I was just expecting this to be like some sort of dungeon crawler where that, you know, it's like, oh, here's a land, like whatever. Is this work? This isn't Warhammer, like this isn't in the same universe as Warhammer, right? All right, so it just has a similar art aesthetic.
Yeah, it's just dark fantasy.
Okay, dude, I don't know. I mean, like whenever I see like armor like that, I just automatically think Warhammer. So, I didn't know if this was like some weird offshoot that I had never heard of or what. But yeah, I don't know. It's just I wasn't expecting much of a story, and it's just. I don't know. I thought it was neat how it was unfolding and like as I played more. Other than that, like I thought gameplay was pretty tight and intuitive. Like I wish it held my hand a little bit more, but I figured stuff out on my own. I really didn't have any complaints about it.
That's one thing worth mentioning too, the hand holding that you mentioned. So even though it doesn't do a lot of hand holding, one benefit I will give in regards to that is the fact that from what I could tell, at least, they don't make much of a penalty for respecing your character, either in your stat point allocation, your skill tree allocation, or otherwise. Like, it's pretty easy to just like, you know what, I'm undoing all this and trying again. even though it doesn't hold your hand, it does give you near free reign to to paint, you know, spackle or remove or varnish and then redo your canvas all over again. Man, could you tell I don't paint? But the point is, it gives you free reign to make experiment till you find the build you want with your character, which is pretty nice. And if we're coming up to the point of the summary.
Yeah, we've got to get to the summary. It is a $40 game. What are your thoughts on this?
I am going to say, given the nature of some of the stuff I mentioned earlier in the episode, I'm not going to give a deny it per se, but I can't go strong on a buy it. And it has to be, if you're okay with glitches and such, or potential glitcheries and stuff, I'll give it a try in that sense, because the game, when it works, is fun. But with that said, if you're listening, devs, please go back in this game and try to, I don't know, hammer out those issues. And heaven forbid, if it's possible, can you increase the size of the damn font?
Yeah.
there's a lot of screen real estate you can work with here. Just do a freaking pop a Microsoft Word bit in here. Just like say text blow up 10 points. I don't know, whatever. Just make this.
I don't think it's that easy per now, but
I know. I know.
Jacob, what are your thoughts?
That's just being ridiculous on it.
At $40, I mean, dungeon crawler fans generally replay the same games over and over again. I mean, like I did the same with Torchlight way back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like especially for $40, you're going to get your money's worth out of it. I'd recommend it. I thought it was solid. And, you know, if you're a Diablo fan, like, you know, while you're waiting for Diablo 4 to come out, like this might scratch that itch for you.
Yeah, I can agree that this is it's a good one to hold you over until Diablo 4. The price is my biggest issue with the issues I mentioned earlier. I think if this was $20, it'd be a no-brainer. $30, I'd be sold on it. $40, I have to be like hesitant. But it's not a deny it, just a hesitant try it. It's got issues, it's got bugs, but it's got a solid foundation, like we mentioned before. And if they can build off it,
they could fix them.
Yeah, if they could build off it and fix the issues, and keep updates coming and smooth out the problems and maybe make connections a little bit quicker for the online games, it's worth your time. But with Diablo coming, it's going to be a hard sell. Anything else?
No, I think that's the kit and caboodle of it all.
All right, next game is Assault Suits Valken Declassified, developed by Extreme and M2, published by Rainmaker Productions, released March 30th on the Switch for $24.99. The original Assault Suits Valken was censored and edited for its international release as Cybernator. This new declassified version finally offers the original Assault Suits Valken officially translated into English for the first time. Chris, it's uncensored and uncut. How extreme is this game?
Whoa. Yeah, that's a little misleading.
No, it's T-rated. Never mind.
Yeah. However, I will have some interesting little weird things about it that are not T-rated. So there's a little a teaser for you.
Should we play the After Dark theme?
No. Oh. It's very, very trivial and not in the game itself. So we're going to talk about, yeah, Assault Suits Valken Declassified. So this is one of the games that I actually rented back when it was new as Cybernator. I saw the cover from Konami. You know, Konami made, the Ninja Turtles game. So, you know, they had my absolute trust. And just like that cover of like a giant angry robot and the back of the box being like, this is who you play as. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, this one burned itself into my heart. It's an extremely good mech suit, like side scrolling, basically a run and gun. But I mean, it's like a slide and gun because your character, your mech moves very slowly. But, you know, and it's really well animated, but yeah, it moves very slowly, but it does have a rocket slide that you'll be using a lot in this game. So yeah, first we'll talk a little bit about, like, the history of it, I guess. It's basically a prequel to Assault Suit Lanos, which came out in the US as Target Earth on the Sega Genesis. And was actually remade later on the PS4. I actually have the remake of that, as well as, you know, actually Assault Suit Lanos as Target Earth can be played if you have the Genesis Switch Online expansion. So this is a game you can play right now on your Switch. Lanos is. So after that, they came up with Assault Suits Valken, which basically it's a 100 years in the past prequel to Lanos. And they basically like pulled out all the stops. They revamped the graphics to be like really good, like sprite art, big explosions constantly. And yeah, this game just does not give a flip. So our little After Dark point number one is that very infamously, there's a rocket ship that your suits like fly around in and such, and get dropped off at like at the points. The very start of the very first level has this giant phallic ship just penetrating the side of like this other ship, and that's where your suit like jumps out and you just come out blasting and stuff. So it's, you know, it's that kind of game. It's just badass constantly. You know, these are it wasn't made by Konami, but when I saw it and saw Konami, I was like, oh wow, this is like, you know, Contra, but, you know, slower and in a 30-foot tall mech. Amazing. So yeah, but the interesting thing about Valken particularly is that not only are you running around and blowing up like stuff, and like you see little guys running around, you can blast them too if you want, is that it also had a story. Like your characters would kind of talk to each other, your commander, your pilot, your pilot's love interest, you know, other people. And in the original game, Cybernator, you saw their names, and they would kind of talk to each other, but you really didn't get a good sense of the characters, because obviously you're, you know, just piloting this big mech the whole time. Well, in this game, now they have portraits. They had anime-style portraits designed by various anime and such artists. So the game has a very anime style that was completely cut out of Cybernator, right? And I have to stop here for just a second to say that a lot of the art for the characters was done by a guy called Satoshi Urushihara. And I'm sorry if that pronunciation is bad. His nickname is literally the Master of Breasts. He's a manga artist. Yeah. I'm surprised Aki did not already know about this guy. Yeah, he's very infamous for his, or not infamous, but he's very famous for his drawings of women and how, you know, whole animes are like based off of them and stuff. And that is literally his nickname. I only just found that out today, so I had to drop that in there. But no breasts in this game. It's very, very modest. Again, giant robots. We're not going, you know, less dressed than that. So anyways, yeah, the game has you going through several levels. Some of them act like shmups. Some of them act, like I said, really badass, like running gun, kind of sliding gun sort of things. You also go through like corridors of ships and stuff, face off against huge bosses. And you each level has a submission in it, like another goal. And if you don't meet that goal in every level, then you will get a bad ending at the end of the game. You'll still be allowed to finish, but it won't be a good one. So you have to go through and make sure you're completing your missions, which, spoiler alert, all involve blowing up something, usually with a time limit. but anyways, so yeah, that is Assault Suits Falcon. Like I said, it is badass. So this particular declassified version, apart from adding back in the censored content of the original game, this remake was handled by the best in the biz, M2. And holy geez, did they drop in a lot of stuff. So in the game itself, we now have save states, load states. We also have a really interesting one that I just want to talk about a little bit, because it's gun settings. With gun settings, you can kind of set how you control the gun, because it's one of those games where you're moving, but as you press up and down, it moves your gun. So you kind of have to like make sure that your gun's in the right position to shoot at enemies and stuff. You can now change the speed of that, as well as the range of angles, which is kind of great. The other thing is that you can add napalm. Now, here's where that's important. Napalm is a secret super weapon in the game. In Cybernator, I've only done this a couple of times, but here's how you have to get napalm. You have to get through the first stage without blowing anything up, except the boss. Then you have to get through the second stage, where you have to not die and also not destroy anything but the boss. And it's a shmup level, so you are literally dodging and trying to live. You are in the most cowardly position possible, just total pacifist. But it once you beat the second boss, you have napalm for the rest of the game, and it wrecks. It is just this absolute fireball of death that you can just shoot constantly. All ammo is unlimited in this game. It only counts down till you can recharge or refill your ammo, which is reload. That's what it's called, which is the same thing that they did in Lanos. In this game, you can just add napalm right from the get-go and just wreck if you choose to. You can set the controller to literally any... There's four presets, and then there's a custom mode that lets you fit... That lets you change any button to do anything. There's, you know, your usual full standard and pixel-perfect screen size and stuff, and then, you know, your screen effects and such. We don't care about those. Wallpaper, whatever. you can save your whole gameplay as a movie, and you can save up to four of them and watch them, which is pretty great. So that's just in the game by itself. Then outside of the game, we have an image gallery, which contains an image collection of 50 images from the original, like, you know, archives of this game. There is the 12-page manual, as well as an 82-page strategy guide, and it's all translated into English. I don't believe any of this was available in English before. There's even a CD booklet that came with the soundtrack. I don't think that there's actually a sound... Although there is. There is a soundtrack to this, too. A music player. There is a movie gallery where not only you can watch your playthroughs, you can also listen to a pretty lengthy interview with Satoshi Nakai, who is one of the designers of the game, who insisted on implementing one of the game's best features, destructible walls and floors. You can actually damage walls and floors in this Super Nintendo game, and it's actually really, really awesome. I mean, it's not like, you know, world beating or anything, but I mean, it was great for a 16-bit game to be able to shoot holes in the floor. and then there's the staff credits, which if you watch the staff credits, definitely do, because it will unlock a secret other bonus I'll leave that for people who actually play it.
Ooh.
Just a ton of like content for this game, and it's done so lovingly because I don't know if you know, but people who are fans of mech franchises get pretty into them. And for folks who are into the Assault Suit series, which basically is this, Lanos, and Assault Suits Valken 2, which came out on the Saturn and I think later systems as well. I don't think we've gotten that one in English yet. It's not a very long series, but this is the as lovingly crafted as you could possibly get for a game of this ilk. So, nice. Another winner from them too, for sure.
Well, it's sitting at $24.99 on the Switch. What are your thoughts?
I mean, that's less expensive than it is to buy a cartridge of Cybernator. Thankfully, Cybernator's not super well known, so it's only in the like $40 to $50 range. But I mean, for the fact that you can get a perfectly running version of the game with all these bonuses and all this like amazement, it's absolutely a buy it. I mean, if you're a fan of running guns, Contra, anything like that, if you're a fan of mech games, you know, things like Metal Warriors or, you know, even obscure crap like Zardian and stuff. Like, yeah, this is a must play. So, yeah, it's a little niche, but I mean, they did everything they could to make it worth $25. So I cannot but give it a buy it. It's got my top recommendation.
Nice. All right, next up is Mother, developed by Enigma Studio, published by Dolores Entertainment, released March 31st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $9.99, an immersive first-person horror adventure where you play the role as Liana, a young girl who arrives home after major surgery and is met with a strange mannequin claiming to be her mother. Aki, what is going on in Mothered?
Okay. This game is all sorts of fucked up, so just be prepared for that when you walk in. Because right at the beginning, it tells you that the game, there's a warning. It's like, this deals with abuse and some other things, so be wary. you go in, you don't recognize anything, and basically your dad's like, here, yeah, just go in, grab this box for me, and, you know, just try and function like a human being, and then go to sleep. And once you wake up, you're like, oh, hey, yeah, here's my mom. And I thought it was weird because I thought she looked like a mannequin. I didn't know that was okay. So it was nice to know that she's not actually supposed to be anything but looking like a mannequin. I was like, oh, they at first I was like, oh, they did. That's one choice, I guess. So, okay, good. and it's not like she doesn't move or anything. She does move. It's really fucking creepy looking, but she moves. And basically she tells you, you know, go do this, go do that, and you go and do it. And it's basically just walking around and hitting A occasionally. And you're so
not
just
a very complex game.
No. And this game, you can 100% this in just a couple hours, which requires three playthroughs, by the way, effectively. So, yeah. So you can beat it three times in like 2 hours. Have fun. Basically all you're doing is just trying to, you know, live in this house and learn more about yourself. And, the first one or two times, you're not going to, but it just starts cycling. You just, once you get to the end, you go right back to the beginning again until you solve the riddles of your life and what's going on in it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Most of it is just walking up to people and hitting A, namely walking up to your mother, occasionally, you know, clicking on doors to open them. When I say A, it's not actually A, it's RB, because everything is through LB and RB. It's really weird. You look at stuff with LB and then you click RB to interact with it.
Also really A's weird. For running. I noticed that this is an E-rated game. Is it not gory? Is there like nothing?
No, nothing is shown. It deals with some heavy topics. I'm kind of shocked it's an E-rated game.
Yeah, it's rated E for mild fantasy violence.
It has some implied violence. But that's it. And it's very dark in some sections. Not just literally, because it does get literally obscenely dark for no fucking reason, which drives me out of my goddamn mind. But also, you know, it gets dark. There are some issues with the game, as you may have already guessed, as I didn't even allude to it. It was a big hint, motherfucking hint moment. Realistically, most hours of the game gets really fucking dark and there's no options or anything. So you can't be like, okay, let's raise the brightness on this bitch. And it's not just a settings on your TV. You're not really going to fix it either, sadly. Also, everything that's more than like 2 feet away from you becomes really blurry, which there's a little mini game basically where you have to go pick 8 apples. And it is so hard to find the apples because after something's like just a couple steps away from you, it's so fucking blurry. You can't see through all the goddamn trees. Oh, and because there's trees, it's pitch fucking black. I bumped my TV. I bumped up the red tinting to max so I could see everything that was red. I don't think it's called color tinting, but whatever. I bumped the coloration to max, the sharpness to max. I put my brightness quite high up. Like, I had everything going to as close to max as possible in order to fucking see these apples and see through these dark areas, and it barely helped at all. They need to fix that and get the hell rid of the fucking blurriness, because that fucking sucks. It has a bit of a twist to it.
Don't spoil anything, obviously.
Well, obviously. But you kind of get a feeling for it in one of your other playthroughs, which is kind of sad. It would have been cool if it was like sudden twist and hit you in the face with it would have been cool, but you know, it's not terrible. It's not great either. It's an okay game.
Well, it's $10. What's your verdict?
I'd say get it on sale, maybe. At least try it when it's on sale. It's very easy, so achievement hunters are gonna love it. It's kind of dark, so maybe some people with that are interested in that might like it, but I don't know if the general audience is going to really vibe with this. So try it on sale.
All right. Sounds good. Next game is Overloop, developed by Charge Games, published by Digirati, released March 24th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4 and PS5 for $14.99. Step into an ethically compromised future where cloning technology has wreaked havoc on humanity, and it's sort of all your fault. As an employee of the nefarious megacorp Infinity Inc. and the inventor of the Quantic Matter Replicator device, aka the QMRD, aka the cause of the world going to hell in a handbasket, it's up to you to sort out the mess you helped create. Pernell and Jacob, tell us about it.
I'll go. Yeah, here we go. So, Overloop, spoiler, I adored this game. I loved it. It was a fantastic ride. And there's not even a whole lot that goes into the layout, which is part of what makes it so great. The game starts out, you're a scientist working for Infinity Labs. You've come up with this new invention, the cloning gun. It's going to revolutionize society as we know it. You start the game out walking up to the press conference where this gun will be unveiled. And once you did the demo for this gun, a year goes by. And within that year, things got bad. It got really, really bad. And you are immediately kind of tasked with stepping out into a world where humans are very much against cloning technology. There are issues related to it. But you don't have time to really consider it and factor it in now, because you're rushing to one of your coworkers' homes where he's being accosted by, like, armed guards. And then that guy sends you down a rabbit hole to find a replica of your cloning gun, and then hopefully putting a stop to whatever's going on. It may seem like I'm a little weird about this, and you're probably right, because I feel like they just kind of throw you into the fray of it once that first year goes by, and I'm kind of okay with that, because once the game gets going, the humor doesn't stop, the puzzle mechanics just maintain my attention, and the game itself flows gloriously. Puzzle mechanics, yes, because the way this game works, the overall gimmick and the way that you're meant to embrace this world is by way of cloning. Very quickly, you get your hands on the cloning copy, cloning gun. And with it, you are able to press a button to create a literal clone of yourself. The clone can do everything you can except enter certain doors. But the clone is able to do one thing that you can't, and that's die over and over again. Because every time a clone dies, he just goes back to the main character, or if there's other clones present, it might trigger go back to another clone that's still on the map. But ultimately, you are being used, you'll be utilizing clones to do all sorts of things that the actual human main character cannot do. Say, for example, you need to go up an elevator. The elevator is powered by gunfire because your cloning gun, for whatever reason, can also fire bullets. Why invent a cloning gun that fires bullets? I don't know. But you might have to fire this gun into this turbine in order to power the elevator. At the top of the elevator, there is a laser that will disintegrate you. But no matter how much you look around, there is no way to get around this facility without going through that laser. Or at least getting as close to the laser as possible that someone's going to take a hit. And it can't be you. So you clone yourself, let the clone power the elevator. He disintegrates, but in the process, he's able to trigger a switch or something that allows the non-clone human character to progress onward. So you'll be doing things like this a lot. You'll be using clones to stack on top of each other, using clones to just destroy objects that would have killed the main normal human character. And as you progress through the game, you'll find upgrades eventually to get allow you to clone yourself more and more times. So eventually you'll be using one clone to hit a switch, another clone to push a block, and then the last clone to pretty much like take a hit for an object that you will then be able to follow behind it to escape unscathed. The puzzles never felt very complicated to me. I was able to get in a rare event for myself, I was able to get a 1,000-point achievement score playing through this game.
Ooh.
And I wasn't trying to grind for it or anything. It was just, whoa, what do you know? I did everything I needed to do, and I got my 1,000 achievement points. And it was great literally the entire time. The humor is on point. The music's on point. And the only thing I found were hilarious, it's not even bad, it was just hilarious, is how all the areas are connected. Like we were talking about earlier about Chia and how the mapping is in that game and trying to get your bearings when you're in locations. In this game, you'll be like, okay, I'm here. Now I'm here. How the hell did I get here? And why am I here? And then you'll see humans who didn't go through the trials you went through just kind of hanging out in the queue like, I can't wait to get to Infinity Park. It's like, you didn't just go through the clone mayhem maze that I just came out of because none of you are equipped for this. None of you are. And then you realize that there are also people that work at some of these buildings. Like, who built these places? But ultimately,
I like how you're looking for logic in a video game.
A game about cloning.
Jacob, what are your thoughts on Overloop?
Honestly, when you showed me the thing, I was just like, oh, this looks like PB Winterbottom from like Xbox 360 era. Except this game I actually enjoyed. I dug the pixel art with it. I agree with Purnell, the humor was on point. And it is like the game from start to finish is ethically dubious, especially with you as the gamer, because you're knowingly sending people off to die. I don't know. I thought it was a nice little philosophic plot, you know, and discussion in the game.
Absolutely.
Usually, you usually don't find like from a title like this. So I did appreciate that. I thought it was solid.
Also, neither of us mentioned this, so we should mention now. In regards to Jacob's point of them bringing this as a point of, you know, clones right to life and the like, aside from a few moments where characters are kind of picketing the concept, there's also the idea that the game numbers every clone you create. And though I will not spoil it for you, there is actually a weird payoff in regards to that, too. The fact that they number all your clones when you create them. I actively played the game with the intent being to not kill as many of my clones as I could. Like, if there was a way to let a clone just dissipate without being murdered horribly, I let them do it.
Wait, hold on. It doesn't kill them at the end of each level? I haven't beaten the game yet, so.
So, when you finish a stage, right, like, every room you're in, The clones can't exit doors. And, right. Of course, when you enter the door, they kind of just fade away. But I'm saying I was okay with that as they're going away by way of fading as opposed to, like, right. being incinerated or chopped up by a buzzsaw or what have you. So I was like, right. if I can go over a door, the clones hanging out.
Okay, I mean, that's what I did, too. I just didn't know if, like, the game actually counted that differently or...
No, nah, it counts it with the normal number. A clone's a clone.
Rude.
No, that's what the game does. A clone is a clone. Hey,
yo. I mean, if that's how you feel about clones, Purnell, I mean,
all I'm saying is, if I could clone myself, I'm pretty sure my clone would kill me and assume my identity. So that's how that works.
Okay,
cool. Well, the game's $15. What do you two think?
Easy buy it. Yeah, easy buy.
I enjoyed it. I mean, I would have been more cool with $10, but for $15, I'm all right with it.
It's one of those cases where, like, I feel like the amount of time I spent on it was equivalent to, like, maybe a little more than the duration of, like, a Marvel movie. So, in that concept, I think I got my money's worth.
You're like, I got infinitely more joy out of this.
Honestly, in this current state of my life, that's probably true. I mean, I haven't seen a Marvel movie in quite a while. I just kind of fell off the bandwagon there. So, absolutely. I think this game is worth your money. You'll enjoy it as long as you're okay with puzzles, and the humor will make you chuckle more than once, I think.
Cool. Sounds good. We got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Paper Tris, developed and published by Flynn's Arcade, released March 30th on the Switch for $4.99. Paper Tris is an interesting and fun arcade puzzle game in which colored cubes can be combined in all six possible directions, and you decide where to place them. It offers not only the classic puzzle variant, but also different depths. There are also power dice and numerous possible combinations in a carefully hand-painted classic but modern game of skill. Chris, what is Paper Tris?
All right, so Paper Tris is following a long tradition of games that, you know, came out in the wake of Tetris's, you know, smash success, both in video games and the box office, I assume. No, it's an Apple movie, never mind. But yeah, you know, so following the likes of things like, you know, Word Tris or Hat-tris, which is hats. Which I actually, I kind of like that game. It's a lot like Yoshi, but anyway. So, yeah, this is a game that is about falling pieces that you arrange to make them disappear and make your brain happy, because that's what puzzle games are for. This one, however, like most of the games that contain the Tris, you know, especially things like, you know, Tetris Attack, which is... one of my top 10 favorite games of all time, but actually is not Tetris in the least. Yeah, this actually doesn't function a whole lot like Tetris. So what it is that, for one, it's got a paper aesthetic. What that means is that all the graphics in the game are represented as cubes that have further cubes kind of penciled onto them, and they look like they were colored with pencils as well. It's pretty good. I like the aesthetic. And they all kind of look like little, you know, just single color, like Rubik's cubes. That's kind of, if that makes any sense. So the whole point of it is that three of them linked together will drop down from the ceiling. So that's going to make you think, oh, columns. It's like columns. It is kind of like columns, except that... well, no, I mean, it's not a whole lot to separate it from columns. Because, yeah, you can basically, if you match up three or more of the same color, they will disappear. And you can, like, the way when you push the button, it will, you can't turn them or anything. So there's no rotation in this game. All you're doing is organizing which color goes first, and then the other two colors will follow behind in a consistent pattern. So if it's like blue at the bottom, yellow in the middle, white at the top. If you push the button, then blue moves to the top, but then yellow moves to the bottom, and when white goes to the middle, and then so on and so forth. And yeah, the whole point of it is to get around the game's various challenges doing this, because obviously, you know, it's not much of a challenge to simply match colors when there's only three of them, and they're in blocks of three and can be moved freely like that. So yeah, they do a lot of clever things. There's two modes. One is challenge mode and one is endless mode. They both kind of do their own thing. And that's in the one player mode. There is also a two player mode, which I did not try because I don't have two copies of the game.
Fair.
There's also online leaderboards and things like that. You know, some pretty good options and a how to play tutorial, which is good too. So it's got, you know, all that kind of stuff. Options like are mostly
a good little package there.
Yeah. So yeah, like I said, in the one player game, they start off where it's just like, hey, match a few colors. And then it eventually gets to where, oh, now there's actually blocks behind you that you can't do anything with, but if you connect a color to them, then they count as a color, and so you have to clear them by matching colors with stuff in the background, stuff in the foreground. You have to bust blocks, or you have to like play the game and get this many lines cleared without clearing these blocks that that are a specific color and placed in an inconvenient location. So you have to play around pieces that you can't bust. Then there's like pieces that are unbreakable, so you have to work around them. And as the game progresses, they introduce more colors and more colors and more colors. There's actually they eventually do get to quite a crayon box of stuff, and of course, the more colors there are, the harder it is to match them up. So this game starts off fairly simple and gets very clever. So I really appreciate that about it. Literally my only complaint, it runs a little slow. In fact, it's a little bit input laggy too. It's less bad in portable mode, but when playing on with it docked with my Pro Controller, yeah, it was a little bit of lag there, but I mean, unless the game starts to get really fast, it's not as important, but, you know, things like, also like pushing left and right, I noticed that the up, which makes the piece fall a lot faster, is very sensitive. Mm. So oftentimes if I am trying to move something to the left or right, then I'll be accidentally triggering it to like just drop the piece. Fortunately, when you do drop the piece, unlike Tetris, it doesn't instantly go where you want, where you're dropping it. It just goes faster and you can still control it to some degree. So, not too bad, but yeah, the issues with it running slow is the only thing keeping this from being like, you know, a new obsession for me. But having said, I really appreciate the cleverness that went into it and like all the thought and the fact that it goes from simple to hard and in a very gradual curve is pretty nice. And again, two player, that's really cool. Tetris didn't have that for a long time.
Well, this is $5. What's your verdict?
Yeah, it's worth $5. I mean, again, performance complaints are really a non-issue at a game at this price point. But having said, I mean, I would pay $10 for a game that ran a little bit faster and a little bit snappier. But, and I mean, people pay $50 for Tetris DS, so there you go.
That game was great, too.
I love Tetris DS, yeah.
That really was mode. Like one of the best versions of Tetris.
Push mode was such a joy. I played that with, I could consistently at one point find like three friends to play that with me at just about any time. those times are long gone, but yeah. Oh, Tetris DS is only like, it's cheap now.
Is it?
It's going down?
Yeah. I'm seeing used copies for mint. Seeing a lot of used copies for less than $20 and they don't look like they're pirated or anything.
Oh, wow.
Well,
anyway, that's it for this episode. Yeah. We made it through. We're not going to talk about Tetris for 20 more minutes. We'll just
God.
Jacob wants to get the hell out of here. He's like, I wanted to leave after the last review. I'm like, there's one left. Deal with it. Aki's sitting here patiently. You don't hear her bitching and complaining. Jacob.
That's because she's straight. Off doing other shit.
Yeah, she's playing
games. Yeah, I'm always... Yeah.
I recommend playing a video game while other people are talking.
Yeah,
exactly.
Here to that.
I've been working on a review game.
I can't because where I do this is the office and
the bathroom.
Play a computer game, motherfucker.
That's why you need a handheld.
No, it's my work laptop. I can't do that.
I was immediately thinking bathroom. That's so funny.
Yeah. So anyway, music. We're going to play some Tetris music from the 1UPS. How's that sound?
Boy.
Just talked about paper.
Also, speaking of the 1UPS, if you're interested, if you're familiar with Mustin's Twitter, definitely go there because apparently he did like a fun commercial for VGMCon and it was freaking hilarious.
Oh, geez. I'll have to check that out. But yeah, music, one-ups, Tetris, everyone, thank you for being here. Jacob, Aki, thank you for being here on a Tuesday night. Cornell and Chris, thank you for being here on your usual night. Brooke, Tim, Big Adam, who else was here? Is that everyone?
Temporarily.
Norg popped in for literally 30 seconds. Yeah, thanks to everyone for being here. Does anyone have any final words to end this one?
No, I want to go.